perhaps you've got some experience here. Is a young person in your life finding it harder these days to get established in a job or to earn enough to get ahead compared to how it was after the GFC? Or perhaps you remember taking a hit career-wise or in your earnings after 2008. Head to our Facebook page and tell us your story there. We'd love to track your comments and see how that discussion unfolds. Sinead Simpkins graduated from university last year. She's based near Parramatta in Sydney. Sinead, thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
Thank you.
Now, you were let go from your job in March. What was that like, staring down a pandemic and a recession?
Very uncertain. I wasn't even born at the last recession, which was in 1991. So I've never really lived through a recession before. The global financial crisis happened when I was still in high school. So when I was let go in March, I wasn't prepared at all. I wasn't having any expectations really, and it was just so uncertain. I just didn't know how to sort of go about it as such.
And it must have been really scary. And I understand it was your first ongoing full-time role too, so that must have been a bit of a blow.
Yeah, it was. Like, in the past, I've landed contract roles which had a sort of an end date, and scoring like my first full-time role that wasn't a contract, it was very disheartening.
Well, and if we think about the job market before the COVID-19 pandemic, how did you go when you applied for jobs having got, you know, 2 degrees? Did you ever have to tailor your qualifications to what you thought employers were looking for?
Yeah, so I have 3 degrees, and so essentially I have to really dumb down my resume. As such, like, just escaping, like, sort of cutting my two postgraduate qualifications, as well as doing a semester exchange over in Japan. I had to cut that out because who wanted someone who speaks a foreign language, but as well as who wants to hire someone who's extremely smart for their age.
So what kind of jobs were you going for where people were saying, no, that's too much, too many qualifications?
So I was just even applying at the local supermarket, really, or a receptionist role, or data entry, really. So a range of jobs, really. I wasn't applying for, like, a CEO of a major company. I was applying for entry-level jobs of any sort of industry, really.
And then I understand, too, that when you were at uni looking for internships in your chosen field, that was tricky as well.
Yeah, it was. When I was doing my undergraduate degree, I got told we won't accept you in this internship because you went to the wrong university. So that was sort of a massive slap in my face, really.
And what about in terms of stability? What was the job market like for Gen Z and Gen Y in recent years in your experience?
In my experience, it's mainly sort of contract roles, so anywhere from a couple of weeks to 12 months. So finding a non-contract role, it's sort of finding a unicorn. It's not there really. So I was just relying on contract roles. I wasn't even looking at my super, which was very upsetting because I want to retire with a good, decent sort of super, really.
Don't we all? Sinead, yeah. Thanks for chatting to us today. And I think you were offered work as a receptionist this week. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was just very surprising, really.
Well, I hope it becomes less surprising as the years go by. We appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Catherine DeFontenay joins us too. She's a commissioner with the Productivity Commission, one of the authors of this new report that suggests that young people have seen a long-term decline in their prospects. Catherine, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks very much, Hilary.
So the report talks about how people's careers were scarred by the GFC. That's pretty powerful language. Tell us about the impact that recessions can have on a young person's career prospect, someone like Sinead.
Yeah, it is very frightening when we think about this current generation. So scarring can take a few forms. The worst kind of scarring happens if you're unemployed for a long period of time. We find that even 10 years later, you're much more likely to be unemployed. Your wages are much more likely to be low. So that's very frightening. But what we found is there can also be scarring from the types of experiences Sinead has had of getting jobs that are less attractive than the ones you were hoping for when you did your degree. Getting a job that's not fully using your skills, we can still see some effects of that even after 4 or 6 years.
Let's go through a few of those points. If we look at wages, what's happened to young people's wages? What do we mean when we say there's been a real decline?
Well, there's been a big decline in their whole income. And that's been because under 25s have seen declines in their hours. A lot of them have not gotten full-time work. Instead, they've gotten part-time work. And in terms of wages, we've seen zero to negative growth in wages for under 25s and for 25 to 34-year-olds. So that's pretty scary. And it's very striking because at the same time, when we look at prime-aged people, that's 35 to 54-year-olds, their average wage growth over this period is nearly identical to before the GFC. So if you think of all those stories that were covered in the last few years about why are wages growing so slowly, that's really actually about under 35s.
So what's going on there? I mean, the changes that we've seen in the job market, the casualization, increase in part-time jobs, drop in ongoing paid employment, aren't they across the board?
Well, so they're happening in a broad sense, but they really affect job seekers rather than people that are already in jobs. So what happened after the GFC was it was a slightly weaker growth economy, and there was relatively weak labor demand. But those of us that were in jobs already didn't really experience that. Our firms, to keep us motivated, they don't cut our wages, even if there's more competition for jobs, and they give us small increases. So we kind of continue to experience a relatively rosy job market. But job seekers really feel the bite of that. So that hits under 35s, because everyone under 35 is looking for a job at one point, usually at several points. But it's important to remember that it also affects job seekers who are older.
And when the economy picks up, why don't young people just start to do better automatically?
So we definitely see that when the economy picks up, job seekers do better, and young people do better when economies recover. So when we have a recovery from COVID, finally, we will see fast improvement in outcomes for young people. But that could be a few years. So what we need to think about is how to prevent the young people looking for work in those few years from being scarred.
And Catherine, how did you measure this impact, the long-term impact that the GFC had on young people?
So what we did was we looked at the occupations people were in after they graduated from university. We also looked at vet graduates, vocational education graduates, but focusing on university, for example, we looked at what types of occupations they were in for the first 4 years after their degree, and then the first 6 years after their degree. And what we found was that they were starting lower than in other generations, lower down the jobs ladder. So they were having to take jobs that were less attractive than earlier generations. And what was really discouraging was we found they were climbing slower than these earlier generations. So even though they were starting with worse occupations, they were struggling to move up the jobs ladder.
And so what does this mean for people who don't go to university and who leave school going, what am I going to do?
Yeah, it's very scary. We found that there was an extra supply of university graduates over this period, and that pushed university students down the job ladder, but that in turn pushed those other young people further down the job ladder. And so what's happened is at the bottom of the jobs ladder, there's been a big expansion of part-time work and casual work in sectors like retail, where maybe wages and conditions are more flexible and more people can be absorbed.
We're talking with Dr. Catherine Defontenay, Commissioner with the Productivity Commission, about this new report that shows there is a scarring effect on young people's job prospects and therefore their life prospects, really, after a recession. And we'd love to hear your thoughts too. Is this something that you have seen in your experience, whether it was after the 1990s recession or the GFC, something you experienced yourself or something a young person in your life might be going through now? Head to our Facebook page and pop a comment on the story there. Catherine, how long does this scarring effect go on for, and how kind of widespread is it?
So there's a big range of outcomes. What we find is some people sail through these times and have outcomes really similar to earlier generations. Some people get stuck in really in not great jobs and really struggle to move up the jobs ladder. So Sinead's experience, unfortunately, is not that uncommon. If you find you have to take a job that's well below your education level, you could easily end up stuck and struggling to move into better jobs.
Well, and if we look even earlier in the career progression process, it perhaps becomes harder depending on who you are and where you live. Let's welcome Jordan Castles. He's a 19-year-old former hospitality worker in Ballarat in regional Victoria. Jordan, thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
Good morning, Hillary. Thanks for having me.
Now, you lost your job rather suddenly back in March. Where did that leave you?
It left me unemployed and trying to figure out how I'm going to make some income to get myself afloat, I guess. It kind of left me empty-handed in choices.
And what were you doing at the time, Jordan?
So I was just doing a bit of back-of-house work for a chicken and beers hospitality joint.
And those were the hardest hit immediately, weren't they?
Yeah, true.
So what have you been doing since then? Is there much work around?
So since then, for work, I've been quite fortunate with picking up an odd job working for this older bloke. He needs some things fixed up around his house. So without any qualifications behind that, he's been willing to teach me a couple of things in being, you know, simple, not heavy machinery, which has been great. And I'm also very, very fortunate to have Centrelink still give the payments to people on JobSeeker.
It is a real difference this time around, isn't it, than other recessions. Jordan, what was this year supposed to look like for you as opposed to how it turned out?
It was looking up. It was really looking up. Coincidentally, as soon as COVID hit, I was planning to do this youth facilitator program where I was going to be running my own course with the council and being paid for how much I feel my course is benefiting whoever I'm teaching, which was going to be a real, real big start into something bigger, I couldn't imagine.
Indeed. Well, and could you do that remotely, or were there roadblocks for that?
We've been trying to look around it, so we've been trying to keep it afloat and keep it going through Zoom meetings, but unfortunately for the course I'm looking to put out for some of the students, I definitely need to be firsthand in front of them, teaching them and showing them hand-on coordination kind of skills.
And if you look ahead, which is a pretty weird crystal ball kind of exercise for most of us, I have to say, what do you think about making plans for next year?
In such sense, don't mean to segue a little bit here, but with COVID going on, and my condolences to all the families and people who have been affected by the virus itself, but in a sense, it's been a very, very good, a good ease of time to collect my thoughts and figure out what I'm actually going to be planning for next year, and to really knuckle down on what I didn't have the time to do this year.
And I understand there's a fair bit of music in that, Jordan. I wish you all the best for that element of your life path as well. Thanks so much for chatting to us today.
Cheers, Hillary. Thank you.
Cheers. Jordan Castles from regional Victoria, Ballarat, a 19-year-old musician, former hospitality worker, and we hope future youth facilitator. Dr. Catherine de Fontenay, the government are supporting young people to enrol in some vocational university courses. What are your thoughts on that as a response to a recession?
Look, I think that makes a lot of sense, because one big advantage of going back to school at this juncture is that when you come out of school, the recession might be over. So that is a big upside. And it is an opportunity to upskill when you are not working. And as I said before, the biggest scarring impacts are from being long-term unemployed. So if you can avoid that even by going back to school, that's really terrific. Our report does show that it's not a silver bullet. It's not the case that just because you got more study, there will be tons of jobs in that sector. But if you choose carefully, I think it's a really good option for young people.
But then what happens if lots of people go into university courses and then come out at the same time?
Yeah, it will be tough. There's no perfect solution here. But I do think that it's a big advantage to be looking once the recession has improved a lot, even if there is more competition at that juncture.
When Jordan mentioned JobKeeper and JobSeeker, those are big changes yes. this time around. What effect might they that have?
So they have big effects. I think it's really important to reduce the human cost of a recession. Also, I think if you're on JobKeeper, even if you're on 0 hours or a very small number of hours, psychologically, you're still part of the labor force. It feels quite different. You're still part of the employed population. And so I think that can be psychologically quite a different experience. But it's also beneficial to the rest of us because it puts money in people's pockets and that stimulates labor demand. So what's going to be really important for young people is labor demand in the next few years, creating more jobs. And so policies that put money in people's pockets and create jobs, those can be very beneficial.
I understand there might also be a kind of trickle-up effect to the generation that might still be housing these young people.
That's right. So one finding is that a lot of the young people who lost their jobs in the first part of this recession in sectors like hospitality, about half of them were living with their families. And so their families, some of those families were able to help support their young people during this crisis. But of course, some families have been hit themselves and aren't in a position to help.
Catherine, what else is different about this period than the 1990s or the 2010s? Is the access to remote working options or more flexible technology or new ways of thinking that we have now likely to help at all?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think that it doesn't help. One big challenge in this recession is that in the previous decade, a big buffer for us has been part-time and casual work that can sort of expand if there's more young workers. And while that's not great work, it's better than being unemployed when things are slow. And some of the hardest hit sectors this time are those sectors that have a lot of part-time and casual work. So it's going to be hard to see whether those bounce back. Other sectors have more working at home. That can be attractive to some young people, having an option to work at home. My concern is that if you're working at home, there's fewer opportunities to be trained by the other people in the workplace. So some of my friends have talked about how their young graduates in this year are not getting the same quality of training as in other years because they're working at home. They're not seeing how other people go about their day, interact with clients. They're not chatting by the water cooler. All that stuff is trivial, but we do learn an awful lot from being in the workplace.
Yeah, the informal mentoring is a huge part of a working life generally.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And so young graduates, you know, thank goodness they have jobs, but it is a reduced quality of learning opportunity if you're working from home relative to other times.
And as we've seen, there are so many sectors that are going to take a while to come back. Hospitality, for example, you can't see that surging, snapping back, for example.
No, and tourism, you know, lots of jobs for young people in a number of tourism-related industries.
Yes, cleaning, on the other hand, is going to be demand for a long time. Catherine, do you have any thoughts
about...
I'm sure
young people are thrilled about that.
Well, exactly, yeah. And then there's this push to get people to come and pick fruit for, you know, quite short periods of time as a stopgap. Are there any other sectors that you can see might expand to take up that slack?
Well, I think obviously aged care is going to need a major rethink. And I think staffing numbers and the quality of jobs in that sector might change quite a bit. So that's one to take a look at.
Yeah, it's a bit of a watch this space, isn't it? Catherine,
we
appreciate your time so much today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Catherine DeFontenay, she's a commissioner with the Productivity Commission, the federal government's economic think tank. And you also heard from Jordan Castles from Ballarat in Victoria and Sinead Simpkins, who's based near Parramatta in Sydney. Michael McKenzie, how are our listeners responding to these ideas?
Oh, texts have been flooding in on this one, Hillary. Here's an example. I was coming out of uni with a business degree in the early 90s. Only work I could get was as a temp with a secretarial agency, turned out to give me some amazing experiences I could later build on. Every job says this texter, will give you something important for the next one. Diana writes from Surrey Hills, I am very conflicted about some of the terminology like scarring and so much prominence being given to this report as I worry about the mental health impact of a doomsday outlook for young people's futures. Very concerned, she says, about coverage of report communicating some kind of hopelessness. Can the author give benefits of this reporting? And in answer to that, Diana, I think as you listen through that conversation with Hillary and Productivity Commissioner Dr. Catherine DeFontenay, Catherine was giving some very real strategies learnt from the lessons of the past when it comes to how we avoid some of that long-term scarring, hopefully, in the future. So hopefully those concerns were answered.
Yes, I think there's a know your enemy process that has to be gone through first,
isn't
there?
That's right. You have to name the enemy and define it and then find a way to defeat it. Sinead, who you spoke to right at the front of this conversation, prompted this response. That young lady, Sinead, with 3 degrees and speaks a foreign language, why won't people hire her for entry-level work? We need smart young people to come in and shake things up and make our businesses, our organisations better, smarter and designed for the new economy. So it's kind of heartening there, Hillary, at the end that Sinead has been just given a temporary job, well, hopefully ongoing, as a receptionist, and things can move on from there.
Indeed, she's got soft skills coming out of her ears, and I hope she can be well utilised in a job that satisfies her and is a meaningful part of community life at some point. Michael McKenzie, thank you.
Thank you.